Hello, and welcome to Some Context Please, a podcast from the team here at Foundry Creative School. This podcast was originally conceived to connect Foundry students and what they are learning in the classroom to what's really happening in the industry. Whether you're an active Foundry student or simply someone who's interested, it's our hope you get an insider's look into the creative industries from an industry perspective. My name is Adam Grieve, and I'm your host for this season where we're delving into the world of interior design. This third instalment, I am once again joined by Matt Leach from Australian Design Radio and Nikki Davey, an Australian interior designer with a background in styling and decoration. This is a continuation from last week where Matt and Nikki introduce us to the client brief. They look at what happens when you don't have a brief, which by the way is nothing good, and dredge up some of Nikki's past experiences using them as case studies. They also look at how to keep a brief open enough so the client can ask for more, the job can evolve, and you can get paid more, which is kind of the point, isn't it? If you did miss last episode, it might be a good idea to jump back to episode 2 and listen to that one first. But without further ado, here's Matt and Nikki.
Hi Nikki, how are you?
Hi Matt, I'm well, thanks.
This session, I really wanted to jump back into the brief because we've talked about the brief previously. But I feel like there's a whole bunch of other stuff that I kind of want to know about that because it seems like such an important area to get right before you even start any work.
Yes, it definitely is.
Is there a good case study that we could kind of look at maybe from your own personal history where you haven't had a brief and it's been problematic just to kind of emphasize why it's important?
Yeah, I've got a few actually.
Sorry.
That's okay. One project that comes to mind is a hotel that I worked on, and it was a very loose agreement with the client. I don't think we even had a proper fee proposal in place, which is terrible. Never do that. But basically, I did all the hotel rooms for the client, which they were really happy with. And the hotel was based in Melbourne, and the hotel, it was kind of, they were an international client, but they wanted a very sort of Melbourne feeling hotel. So it was, you know, a little bit industrial, but very sort of minimal and quite pared back. And then after I'd done the rooms, they said, oh, would you like to do all of the common areas as well? And I was like, sure, I'd love to do all of the common areas. And this is a client that had, so it's an international hotel operator, and they have their own design manager. So when they engage you, they sort of provide you with quite a bit of visual imagery already. So they often have, you know, sort of themes in mind, which is what they do for the rooms. And anyway, so for the common areas, they provided me with all these visual references, which were quite different from the rooms. Like they were quite bohemian, these spaces that they were showing me. Lots of sort of mid-century timber furniture, Persian rugs, lots of timber, whereas the rooms that I'd been working on were quite cool. Like it was a lot of sort of concrete and black steel, a little bit of timber, but they felt quite deliberately cold. They weren't super warm spaces. So I got all of these images and I was like, oh, okay, great. They're wanting to do something quite different, a lot warmer, a bit more sort of boho, eclectic. And so I put together a scheme and selected all this furniture for them, presented it to them, and like they were just really confused when I presented it. They were just like, no, we wanted something like the rooms, like this is completely out of line with the rest of the hotel. It was just basically a complete misunderstanding. So that all these images that they'd provided me with, there were very specific things about the images that they liked. So it was like, it wasn't the bohemian Persian rugs and styling in the background. It was like they liked the LED lighting underneath the stair treads and things like that. So there were all these kind of, there were all these very detailed little things, and like the heavy timber furniture. I think they'd showed me those images just because they liked the fact that the chairs had arms that people could push themselves up if they were sitting in the chairs. So it wasn't the style of the chairs that they liked, it was just the practicality of those big arms. So it was basically all these very specific little things. And I guess because the client was based internationally, a lot of our communication was via email. We just had a bit of a mutual misunderstanding, and I totally didn't hit the mark on that one. But I mean, it was fine. It just was, you know, I just went back and redid it, but I just wasted so much time. And I just, I kind of wish that when I got those images, I could have just conferenced them or something and, you know, really got from the client what their brief was in terms of look and feel.
There'll be people sitting there thinking, oh, well, you know, at least she retained the client and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think when you're trying to run your own business, you know, time is money, as they say.
And
that time that you spent working up the bohemian chick kind of thing could have been spent, you know, working for another client.
And
kind of bringing more money.
Exactly.
It's important. So important. I always kind of think about that kind of idea that, you know, if there was more time spent on the brief, it would be a small percentage to the time that you wasted.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And it's not just your time either. Like you're wasting time on that timeline that I was talking about.
Yep.
And you're also, you know, you're kind of wasting your client's time as well. Like sometimes your clients don't have much time for these meetings and often their time is very valuable. So you don't want to waste it unnecessarily.
And potentially losing face as well. Even so, you know, everyone in hindsight can see that it was just a communication error.
Yeah, but it was quite embarrassing because they were so confused. Like, because it was very disjointed from what I'd presented previously for the rooms, which they loved. And so I think they were just like, whoa, we loved what you were doing. Like, why on earth have you gone off on this, you know, tangent? Like, it doesn't marry with the rooms at all, which I couldn't have agreed more with, but I just thought that's what they wanted, but they didn't.
With the benefit of hindsight, looking back on that job, and, you know, I like the fact that it's, you're dealing with a client probably, you know, through email and, you know, it's not like you can sit face to face. What would you have done differently with your experience now and your knowledge now?
Well, I just would have made sure I really clarified the brief with them, like any information that they were sending through to me as sort of briefing information, little snippets, images and plans and that kind of thing. I just would have made sure that I arranged conversations with them via Skype or conferencing or phone call to just really clarify exactly what it was about what they were sending through to me that they wanted included in their project. And then I definitely would have put all of that into a return brief just so that to make sure. And the other good thing is about putting a return brief in is sometimes you can even have a conversation with a client and still have misunderstandings even though you're talking to each other. And so if you put something in a return brief, that gives the client an opportunity to read through the brief and go, oh, no, that's actually not what I meant. You've got like another opportunity to further clarify things.
Yeah, I really like the fact that you mentioned return brief. Return briefs for me when I was starting out was one of those things that I thought, oh, is anyone actually going to read this? And am I just doing this for my own benefit? And over time, I've realized how important it is for exactly the reason you just mentioned, that you can be thinking you understand exactly what they're saying, but when you put it in your own language, it looks completely different to them.
Yeah. Especially when you're sort of working in the field of design, I think, where it's quite visual. Yeah, a lot of the time things that are described can sort of come up as very different visual images to different people.
I've heard a lot of people talk about when you're writing a return brief, you try and use the client's words as much as possible. Do you agree with this?
Yeah, I do. I guess in a couple of ways. So I think it's important not to assume that the client understands design language, because they don't work in a world of design like us. So just to keep your language, I wouldn't say simple, but just, you know, so that anybody that can clearly understand it, regardless of whether they work in a design-based industry or not. And also often what I will do, even if I work, particularly if I'm working on a commercial project, is I'll actually go and read that company's mission statement. So I'll go onto their website and I'll try and do as much stalking as I can.
Yeah.
And I'll go through all of their mission statements and kind of try and work out what they stand for. And then once I've sort of established what that company stands for and what's really important to them, then I will try and use that language in my documents for them.
So it's really a method, you know, the return brief is a bit of a method to clarify language and clarify needs And I guess I'm thinking about, you know, a client who says they want a 1920 style, clarifying that they actually know what a 1920 style is.
Yeah, exactly. Because then you might be like, oh, great, this is an Art Deco project. And they're like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't like Art Deco.
Yeah. So it's that kind of chance to sort of bring them into your world a little bit and just make sure that all the language is correct.
Yeah, exactly.
We've spoken before and you said there is sometimes there's instances where it's better not to have a brief, which I guess from my background feels like completely alien. So can you explain that a little bit more?
Well, I think you should always definitely have a brief, but sometimes there's some information that I think that can be left out of the brief, visual sort of aesthetic stuff. So I think sometimes when a client gives you too much information about what they want out of a project in terms of the look and feel, it sort of can stop you from exploring avenues that, you know, if they saw them, they might actually prefer those ideas to what they've already put forward to. So I think it's good to have like a bit of an indication of what the client wants. I don't know. I normally don't like the client to give me too much visual references. Yeah. Like I like to be able to have an opportunity to come up with my own ideas and throw them to the client and see what they think before they're putting all of their ideas on top of you. And that's what they pay you for as well. So yeah, it's good for them too.
This really brings you back. I mean, you know, the Henry Ford quote, you know, if I'd asked people what they wanted, they would have just said faster horses.
Yeah.
And it's that idea that they don't know what they don't know. And
exactly.
So it enables, I mean, the whole reason they're employing you is so you can actually, I guess, help educate them and show them things that they don't already know.
Yeah. And even sometimes the client, like normally when the client has ideas about what they want for a project and they give them to me, I never say, right, great, I love that. That's what we're going to do. Even if I do love it, we're always like, okay, you know, I'll take that on board. And then you explore all the options and you can go back to the client and be like, we loved this idea, but what do you think of this one? You know, we think that's stronger because blah, 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 blah. So you don't, like, all the information that the client gives to you is great, like it's informative, but you don't have to do everything exactly how they want you to do it because they're not the designer, you're the designer, you're the one that, you know, ultimately should be coming up with the solutions.
I was at an event last night and someone said they're employing you because you've got skills they don't have. And so
exactly, yeah,
it's important that that everyone remembers that in the relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
I imagine it's a bit of a tightrope though, isn't it? Because I can hear a client sort of saying, but I showed her what I wanted.
Well, that's why I think it's important to keep the communication lines open with the client throughout the whole design process. So sort of back to that timeline I was talking about earlier, not just going away with all the client's information, coming up with everything yourself and then presenting it, you know, when you think you've done all of the work already and they just need to sign off on it. Like, I think it's really good if you can, you know, arrange to have regular meetings as you work through the design process, just to take them on the journey with them and just make sure you're still on the same page. Because sometimes it can be an ego thing as well. Like,
right.
I think with some clients, probably more so commercial clients, you know, if they think they've come on the journey with you and they've been part of the decision making, they'll be much more open to what you're delivering as opposed to thinking they've just been left out of the loop and left in the dark and you've just run off and done your own thing, you know, regardless of what they've told you they wanted.
And they also become an advocate for your design as well, don't they? And they're wanting to sort of like impress it upon other people as well. So they kind of become a salesperson for you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's nice to share the design process as well. Like, it's, you don't have to just, you know, limit yourself to only bouncing your ideas between designers or stylists or creatives. Like, you know, lots of people do have a little bit of creative juice, even if they're an accountant or, you know, you can still bounce things off your clients to see what their reaction will be. And, you know, I do think that there is still a place for them to contribute to the design process.
So it's not really about not having a brief. It's more about simplifying the brief down so it's more workable.
I think you definitely 100% should have a brief for every single project, but just when it comes to the look and feel of the project, what they're trying to achieve there, I think that needs to be left a little bit open to the decorator, stylist, or designer.
Is there anything else that we should cover off about briefs, just to really push home the importance of it?
I think what you said earlier, just about spending more time on the brief initially. Like, if you put more time into the brief at the very start of a project, it can seem tedious as you're doing it, but there's so much value in doing that because it can just save you such an enormous amount of time as you work through the project.
The final thing I wanted to talk about with briefs is format. So how would you be giving the brief back to the client?
I normally just do it in a Word document. I think it's good if you do it in something that the client can potentially edit and then send back to you if they would like to. I probably wouldn't do it in Adobe or something like that. I would do it in Microsoft Word or Google Documents or something. And then, yeah, the client can scribble on it or cross things out or highlight things in red that they want to change. Because it should be like an evolving document as well. It's not like, here's the brief, guys, and we're sticking to that. The client will have feedback, and then maybe you have a bit more feedback, and briefs can change as well. Like the brief that you have at the start of the project, you know, it might evolve by the end of the project.
You're pointing out that it's a very collaborative process, the return brief. It's not just a, like, here's what you want. It's like, this is what I think we're working towards, and you can both sort of feed into that.
Yeah, yeah. And it also gives the client a chance to consider things more than they probably did when they initially engaged you. Like, there'll be things in the brief that they haven't really thought about yet, and it's a good prompter for them to actually have a think about what they do want or exactly, you know, what rooms they do want you to treat and that kind of thing.
Now, you spoke about the brief evolving, which is purely natural, but there has to, do you have a time when it, like, that brief is set in stone? Or
normally there'll be a bit of a clause in your fee proposal, so the brief needs to, it goes hand in hand with your fee proposal. Your fee proposal is, you know, to do the works that are prescribed in the brief, and there should be a clause in your fee proposal about if the brief changes, being able to review that fee proposal. So the client can't suddenly, you know, sign off your fee proposal and then say, oh, we've got an extra two rooms that we want you to do now. Yeah. then you refer to the little clause and you can update your fee proposal to match the new brief. So it's set in stone with your fee proposal, but it can evolve, and then your fee proposal can evolve as well.
I really like that advice, because I think if you try to set the brief too in stone, then the client actually feels quite constrained, and as it progresses, they start to think, oh, I'm really liking some of this stuff that you're doing, and actually this is making me think of this, and, you know, and I would love you to do that extra room and that sort of stuff. And if they don't have that ability, then you're potentially cutting yourself out of extra business.
Yeah, no, I think I always like to think that the brief is a live document and you can just keep updating it throughout the project. It's not, I don't like to think of it as set in stone.
And if you've got that free proposal kind of review built into it, then it actually becomes a quite happy conversation if they want to kind of add stuff, because you're bringing more business in without even having to look for a new client.
Yeah, I think most clients are pretty understanding that if they want you to do extra work, they are, you know, you're a professional. They have to pay you for that.
I think it gets more worrying when people, their style starts changing or their expectations start changing slightly.
Yeah, that's kind of why it's good to have the brief though as well, because I feel like the brief helps set the expectations. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a brief, the expectations can be kind of all over the place. Like, it's not always the client's fault. Like, you know, especially if it's a private residential project, like if they're not experienced with working with stylists and decorators, you know, how do they know what to expect? Yeah. So I don't see it as their job. to manage the expectations and the brief. I see that as our job to manage the expectations via having a really good brief.
What a great place to leave it. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem. Thanks, Matt.
Nikki finished up the conversation by talking about managing the expectations of clients. This can be one of the hardest parts of the job, as every client has their own idea of how much something should cost, how long a project should take, and how much participation is required from them. As Nikki points out, it's our job to manage their expectation, and a key tool to do that is, drumroll please, the brief. Get that right and everything should flow easier. If you have other questions or want to reach out to Matt, you can message him on Twitter at Leechworth or via the Australian Design Radio podcast. Thanks again for listening and see you next time. Some Context Please is produced by Foundry and executive produced by me, Adam Grieve. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can DM Foundry on Instagram at MyFoundryLife. Foundry is an Australian creative school designed to bridge the gap between education and industry. We work with top creative leaders from all creative disciplines to design courses that help you find your passion and turn it into your career. To find out more about Foundry's current courses and upcoming intakes, visit foundry.com.au.